Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
There are many songs one could say is their favorite Joan Osborne song. There's Little Wild One from the album of the same name. There's her first big hit, If God Was One of Us, which was released 25 years ago this month. And then there's one of my favorites, Righteous Love. Now there is not one place that doesn't feel like home. No matter where I go, I know I'm not alone. I've never been so sure of love. Oh, you're all so lucky I didn't sing. In addition to her own work, Osborne is adept at reinterpreting the songs of legendary 20th century musicians. She's recorded covers of Gladys Knight, Bill Withers, and Ray Charles. And following her 2016 Cafe Carlyle residence, where she did Bob Dylan covers, she released a full album of Dylan. Let's listen to a bit of her version of Tangled Up in Blue. She turned around to look at me as I was walking away. I heard her say, over my shoulder, we'll meet. Now, Joan is back in residency at Cafe Carlyle, and she's taking on the catalog of another songwriting giant, Tom Waits. Joan Osborne will be at Cafe Carlyle through March 7th, and she is in studio with me now. It is such a pleasure to see you again.
Oh, it's so nice to be back here. Thank you so much for having me.
So this is your third time at Cafe Carlyle?
It is, yes.
What do you enjoy about that space as a performing space?
Well, I think there's a reason that it's a legendary cabaret room. Just sonically, it's such a beautiful, intimate room. It's one of those places that almost pulls the music out of you and pulls the singing out of you, as opposed to you having to work so hard. So there's that. And, you know, they've been very generous with us by allowing us to kind of use it as a laboratory for this songbook series. You know, you mentioned that we did the songs of Bob Dylan there the last time we were at the Carlyle, and it's really sort of part of my idea to do something that Ella Fitzgerald did back in the late 50s and early 60s, which is to have a songbook series. Mm-hmm. And she put out, I believe, 8 or 9 records, and each one was dedicated to a particular songwriter like Cole Porter. And when we got the invite to play the Carlyle the first time, I thought, well, I'm not really a cabaret artist, so what can I do in this space that is going to be unique to me? And I thought, this is the perfect chance to try to do something like Ella Fitzgerald did and pick a different writer for each of the residencies. So we did the Dylan, and this time we're doing Tom Waits, and it's been a great sort of laboratory to develop this material.
How does it differ from when you're planning your gigs for someplace like City Winery or mm-hmm. some other intimate spaces? How is it different to prepare for something like this kind of residency with one artist?
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, if I'm doing a show at the City Winery or another place, we're mostly doing a lot of different things from my own catalog, things from recent records. But this is focusing on one particular artist, so you get to do a really deep dive. You know, I certainly was a Tom Waits fan when we decided to pick him for this next residency. But then you get to discover new things about somebody that you already love, and that's been great. You know, I've been going back to his earliest records and finding songs that I didn't know and that I'm falling in love with, and then also looking at his more recent stuff. You know, he's gone through these phases as a songwriter, from being a guy in the 70s who was like more like a Southern California singer-songwriter and writing things like Old 55 that got covered by the Eagles, and then being more like a, you know, a beat poet with a bottle of whiskey on a piano kind of guy at 3 a.m, and then moving into more experimental territories, and then collaborating with people like Robert Wilson for theater pieces. And then his more recent original work, he seems to have become more woke, I guess. I call him Woke Waits, and he's got more political content in these more recent songs. So for me, it's been great to, you know, certainly I knew his work, but I didn't know it as well as I've become more familiar with it in doing this show.
What do you admire about his songwriting? You're a songwriter. You know what that experience is like.
Well, you know, I admire that he seemed to come from this place of idolizing you know, great American songbook writers like a Cole Porter or something. And in fact, one of his records was sort of a response to the Frank Sinatra album In the Wee Hours. In the Wee Wee Hours, he fell in love with that record and then sort of wrote an entire album that was kind of his version of that sort of late night, you know, distinguished, you know, in a bar, sophisticated kind of thing. So I love that he is grounded in that appreciation of the craft of the great American songwriters. But I also love that he has, you know, he didn't stay there. And I think a lot of the songwriters that he admired, you know, they did their thing and that's what they did. But he has developed himself, you know, coming out of this Southern California thing through this beat poet type phase into this more experimental thing influenced by people like Harry Parch, who's like a very inside kind of guy, in this different sonic territories. I mean, we've been digging into the late 80s movie Big Time, where he did a live concert movie. And he's using all these crazy textures, and he's a very theatrical artist in his presentation. So I love that he started by emulating his heroes, but then also developed this in a way and put it through his own very particular lens, and became someone who's really, you know, very much a singular artist. You know, he's you know, people admire him for being this very unique figure in American music.
My guest is Joan Osborne. She is in residency at the Cafe Carlyle through March 7th, singing the songs of Tom Waits. So when you sit down and you approach a song, especially one that a lot of people know, mm-hmm. how do you go about it? And how do you go about deciding how you're going to interpret it?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of a process of, you know, just trying a bunch of things, you know, process of elimination, mm-hmm. really. You know, I may have an idea when I go into the studio with the guys that I collaborate with. It's a guy named Jack Petrozelli on guitar and Keith Cotton on the keyboards. And we tend to, you know, sit in our home studio and just throw a bunch of ideas at something. And I may have a thought about, oh, you know, I want to take this song. And for instance, there's a song he has called Come On Up to the House. And his version of it and other cover versions of it that I've heard are more like a meditative gospel thing. And I thought, well, this, you know, this title, Come On Up to the House, it sounds like you're inviting someone to a party. So let's try to throw a party with this song. And we've given it a different groove and a different energy. So sometimes you'll have an idea and it'll work like that. And that particular idea is working very well for that song. Other times you'll have an idea and you'll test it out and you realize, well, on paper that was great, but in the execution that just was a total failure. So then you know maybe just start with just, all right, let's you know, just start with the voice and piano and see where, you know, my particular voice meets with the song in a way that allows it to blossom into something that hasn't been done before, and that can take a long time or it can take just a moment.
What was an example of one you thought, this is going to be great, and then it just was not great?
Yeah, let's see. Of the recent stuff, I guess, you know, we were trying to do that song, Old 55, and we were trying to put some kind of a different groove on it and turn it into, I think, maybe like a bossa nova or something, and it just fell apart. So, you know, sometimes the bones of the songs are there for a reason, and you have to respect that.
You did an album of Bob Dylan covers after your residency. Do you anticipate you'll do one of Tom Waits as well?
Yeah, that's the plan. I mean, it's really, yes, I think if people are interested in hearing this, then that's what we will do, yes.
My guest is Joan Osborne. She'll be in residency at the Cafe Carlyle through March 7th. It was interesting to hear you talk about, describe Tom Waits' evolution as a songwriter, mm-hmm. and him not having fear of deciding to try something new or go down a different avenue. Mm-hmm. As you look back on your own songwriting from when you started out, what have you noticed has changed in your songwriting?
Well, it's funny that you bring that up. I think for me, getting out of my own way has been the biggest challenge over the years. And I, you know, intellectually I knew that, but I think emotionally it was sometimes difficult for me to get into that place of not being afraid to make a mistake. Because that's a very difficult place to come from as an artist, of being terrified that you're going to be judged harshly or that you're going to do something wrong. You want to be able to make a lot of mistakes and, you know, have that be part of your process. But I think as I've I've gotten older, you know, I was telling this to my teenage daughter, the great thing about being older is that you just don't care what other people think of you anymore.
So true.
And that's just so liberating.
The gift of over 40. You're like, yeah, no.
Yeah, it's just so liberating. And so I think that's maybe the coolest thing about, you know, working as an artist at this point in my life. And in fact, we are developing and have been working very hard on an album of original material, which will probably be the next thing that we release. And that'll be coming in the fall. And, you know, a lot of it is just that my response to the times that we're living in and, you know, wanting to have a voice in the process and also wanting to use the power of music to do what music needs to do right now, which I think is to lift us up when we're feeling discouraged and to allow us to connect to other people in our communities and also to allow us to recognize the humanity of people who maybe don't agree with us politically. But if, you know, I have fans from all over the political spectrum and, you know, you come to a show of mine and you're going to maybe sit next to somebody who you might have been having a war with them on Twitter or Facebook in a different way. But in this situation, you're enjoying something together as members of a community. And I think that there's real value in that. And I think that music is in a unique place to allow us to do that with each other right now.
How are you as a creative person taking care of yourself as someone who cares about what's going on in the world, who wants to pay attention? We were discussing this a little bit off mic earlier, wanting to pay attention, but at the same time having to, you know, you have to take care of your creative self, your performer. You have to get up there every night. You have to give of yourself, but also you can't live in a vacuum.
Exactly. I mean, that's, I think music, because I'm lucky enough to do music for my job, my profession gives me a way to renew myself. It also gives me a platform where I can speak out about things that I think are important. And, you know, in particular, I mean, I've always done that, but this is a time where we really can't afford the luxury of looking away. But that being said, you've also got to take care of yourself and you've got to allow yourself to hang on to that sense of joy of being alive, because without that, you're not going to have the energy to take care of the people that need your help, whether that's people in your family, people in your immediate community, or people in the larger world who are being victimized by what's going on right now. You've got to have that sense of energy and optimism. You know, even though you understand that there's a lot of work to be done, you've got to hang on to that. So for me, music does that for me, whether it's the process of making my own music and performing live in front of people. That's always been a great joy of mine. Or just going home and, you know, putting on a Ramsey Lewis record while I'm, you know, cooking dinner or something. And just like, okay, for this next hour, it's just going to be about us being at home together and, you know, being a family. And that's got to be enough for right now.
My guest is Joan Osborne. She'll be at Cafe Carlisle through March 7th. It blew my mind when I, you know, went down the Twitter rabbit hole to think that If God Were With One of Us came out on February 21st, 1995.
I know.
That's so crazy. When you think back to that week, what do you remember about that week?
Oh, gosh. It was a whirlwind. You know, they, when you put out a record, there's a lot of, you know, people think, oh, you put out a record and then you're done and then you go on tour or whatever. But of course, there's a lot of promotion and there's a lot of photo shoots and there's a lot of radio interviews and there's a lot of TV performances and there's a lot of this. So it was a total whirlwind, that coming out. And I think having come from being a working musician, mostly in New York City or in the Northeast, that sort of blindsided me just of that whole different job that you're also doing. In addition to creating the music and performing the music, you're also promoting the music. And I always used to sort of look at a guy like Prince and be very envious, because at a certain point he was just like, you know what? I'm not doing that anymore. Mm-hmm. My job is to make music. You guys can talk about it in whatever way you want to and do whatever you want with the promotion. That's your job. I'm going to do this. And, you know, I think if it's rare people who have the luxury to be able to do that. I have to get out and flog it, because that's, you know, I want people to hear it, you know.
Sure. So. What would you tell your old self, yourself, now that you've had life experience and a good, nice, long career?
I think I would tell myself that, you know, you're beautiful and you look fine. I think being in the media spotlight, it sort of made me feel like I was back in middle school again, where I was looking at myself and judging myself very harshly because mm-hmm. other people were sort of doing that and saying, oh, you're too this or you're too that, or I don't like your hair or this or that. I think I would just say, you know what? You are you and you're beautiful and just go out and do your thing and don't get caught in this weird mindset of thinking that you have to look a certain way in order to be acceptable. Because I said no to a lot of things because I was afraid to be on television or mm-hmm. this or that. And I think I would just say, you know, you're beautiful. Go ahead and do it.
The marketing, the marketing machines at that time in the music industry were, I think they were toxic to a lot of mm-hmm. women.
I mean, and they still are, and they yeah. always have been. There's a certain very narrowly accepted idea of what is okay for a person, especially a female, to look like. And if you fall outside of that very narrow definition, then, you know, you sort of grow up knowing that you're not that. And maybe you try to be that, or maybe you feel bad that you're not that, or maybe you rage against it, and you're like, screw that, I'm going to be me. And, you know, but it always seems like you're aware of that, and as opposed to just being who you are and allowing your own, self to be good enough and your own beauty to shine through. And, you know, it's funny because people would tell me in that time, oh, you know, I love seeing you up there because you're different than, you know, some sort of cookie cutter or whatever. And, you know, a part of me was like, oh, that's great, thank you. And then another part of me was like, oh, you mean I don't look like the way I should look, you know? So I was, you know, I was in a weird place with that. But, you know, but all that is just stupid. And I know that now that I just don't care what anybody thinks of me. But I didn't know it then. So yeah. that's one thing that I would tell myself.
Have you had these kind of conversations with your daughter?
I would like to. If I'm away from home on tour and she's at home, I write her letters and I'll put little things like that in it.
That's
but
so nice.
As far as like, but she's 15 right now, so she doesn't want to hear anything I got to say. You know,
she kind of does.
I try to slip it in here and there, but we, you know, as far as like sitting down and having a heart to heart with your teen, that's not a regular occurrence at our home, sadly. You know, maybe it will be soon.
She'll, you know, she's listening. It gets mm-hmm. in. It gets in.
That's
there.
What people say. Yeah,
it's true.
Yeah.
Who is an up and coming singer songwriter that you really admire? You think has just really got the goods?
Gosh, that's a very good question. I wouldn't say that she's up and coming, but I love what Brandi Carlile is doing right now, and you know the way that
yes.
she's taking her moment and really stepping into that and owning it. I love that. There is a group called Birds of Chicago that I am super in love with, and it's a husband and wife team, and they're amazing. They're sort of part of the Americana scene, and I'm loving them. Let's see. Of course, I'm blanking on other people that I've met and loved. But that's, you know, I feel like the Americana scene is the place where I tend to go to for who are the great, you know, writers and who are the interesting up-and-coming people. You know, of course, and great singers, too. I mean, that woman Yola is just blowing me away
Amazing.
Right now. She's incredible. So there's a lot of great artistry in that scene in particular, I think.
All right. So we've got Tom Waits' album after the residency and new music.
Yes, yeah. Probably the new music will come out first.
Okay.
Because it'll, you know, we want to put that out right now. And then the Tom Waits cover album will be next. And then who knows? Who do you think we should work with next? Or what songwriter
Ooh,
do you think we should discover
that's
next?
That's a good one. I would love to hear you sing Carole King.
Oh, well, that's not a bad idea.
I would love to hear you sing Carole King.
Yeah. I was thinking maybe Nick Cave, but that's, there's room for a lot of different
projects. There's more
yeah,
nights.
That's the great thing about this, is I could just keep going and going.
Joan Osborne is in residency at the Cafe Carlisle through March 7th. Please come back when your album comes out.
Okay, I will.
This is all of it.
NYC Now delivers the most up-to-date local news from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. With 3 updates a day, listeners get breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from across New York City. By sponsoring programming like NYC Now, you'll reach our community of dedicated listeners with premium messaging in an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to get in touch and find out more.